Welcome to episode 24 of the Iron Agenda, the podcast about War Machine, hordes, and whatever else is on our minds. Hey everybody, and welcome to the Iron Agenda, the podcast that always fields the attachment. I'm Josh.
I'm Dave.
I'm Pat.
I'm Stu.
And Stu's our attachment for the day. So Stu, what kind of attachment are you?
He's a brute thrall, obviously.
Definitely. I mean, if my forum titles are any indication.
When are you going to get the steam fists put on?
Well, plus the brute thrall is one of my more amused models, and much to some people's chagrin in my Krix armies, but yeah, I love him. He's great.
So we're talking about unit attachments today, and all their varying forms.
And weapon attachments and the like? Are we going for the full attachment route?
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to talk about Warcaster attachments?
We can. They're attachments. They have the word attachment in there.
Okay.
They attach to things.
What about solos, which assist specific units?
We can talk about those. In some cases, we'll need to, at least as a comparison to the UAs.
Okay. But I thought you were going to say no, because they weren't attachments.
Well, if otherwise, we'll be talking about the Brute Thrall, the Necrosurgeon, and the Sea Witch for Krix.
No one
cares
about
two of those three kind of suck.
Do people care about Krix?
Yes.
Oh. All right, so let's start at the beginning. Unit attachments.
What is the purpose? I mean, the purpose, I think, is three main things. One is just it's another entry for Privateer Press to develop into the book. It gives them something else to charge you another $12-13, which, you know, I mean, hey, they're a business. They're trying to make money. That's what they're doing. And then lastly, it's just trying to breathe some life into an old or perhaps even considered subpar unit and bring them into light.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think, you know, you're talking about there basically commercially and as well as developmentally and commercially. You know, on the commercial side, from Privateer Press's point of view, is it's easy. It's easy for them developmentally. They're like, hey, instead of going to the trouble to come up with a whole brand new unit, let's just make something to stack onto an existing unit. It's easier to do. It's quicker to do. At the same time,
disagree.
Though. Well, okay, fine. You talk.
But at the same time,
what you got, you've also got, you know, to that existing unit, you give some new skills, abilities, orders. It can even completely change the way that that unit might work. So
it's I a think half that's day kind of thing. Yeah,
exactly. So, you know, as opposed to something completely brand new. That's my opinion. What's yours, Dave?
Well, I would say to some extent that a unit with a unit attachment is, to some regards, an entirely new unit. I mean, it has to basically re-go through the entire playtest and development lifecycle to balance it against other things in the game. I mean, just because the unit already exists doesn't mean that there's not enough significant enough of a change to require reevaluation.
I agree with you on that, but at the same time, even though you are still going through playtesting and some development, it's not like it's completely brand new. At least the bulk of the unit, you've already seen it. You know what it does. You know what its rules are. You've got a couple new pieces with some new rules that make some difference, but that's different than a completely brand new unit.
I think that can be a detriment, though, in playtesting. Because let's say I know how – I'm just going to take an example here. The long gunners work. I know how long gunners work. Mm-hmm. I add the unit attachment. When testing them, I play them more like the long gunners used to play and maybe not necessarily like I could be to get the most out of testing, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
From a playtesting perspective, I think it would be interesting to know how they playtested the allies, which all came out with the units at the same time that the unit came out with. So we're not privy to how they did that, but I wonder what kind of process they had to go through testing the unit by itself and with the UA.
Well, and there is one more reason that you can bring out a unit attachment, and that's to update rules with new rules ideas. Like the long gunners are an excellent example of that. They had everything you would expect a unit of riflemen to have, but concentrated volley came out later and the UA gave them a chance to
do something similar,
kind of, yeah, basically be able to bring their game into it because they figured long gunners should be able to pull this similar kind of stuff.
Instead of giving them the good version, they gave them the long gunner version.
Well, in some ways it's a little better because you don't have to hit.
Do you think so?
Yeah, I mean, you can't place it wherever you want.
Anyone who passes in through it.
Right, and that's why I don't like it because, well, okay, it's okay, if you like to play denial style, that's perfect.
Absolutely.
If you've got a gap that's, you know, 5 inches wide, that's the only thing they can get through. That's fantastic. But a lot of times you throw that out there and people will say, oh, I just won't go that way, but I can go somewhere else on this 40
inch. Which may be right where you want them.
You can deny charges. I think it has a lot of uses, but it's not what the long gunners used to be used for. And so it is I wouldn't say too extreme change in thinking for the player behind it, but it is a different way to use them. That's kind of what I was talking about with the testing thing. Mm-hmm. You have to completely adjust how you use the rest of the long gunners if you're going to rely on that ability.
Mm-hmm. I'll say more about them later.
Okay.
You're going to sing?
No, I'll say more about them later. About, I have more to complain about.
How about the commercial aspect? Let's say I'm going to use the Miles Bear because I think this is a perfect example. You've got the Zealots. You know, they came out and they weren't bad in Prime. I actually never played before Escalation, so I haven't used them in that form myself. You know, their grenades were still good, but they didn't have the extreme survivability that the Miles Bear grants them. And I would venture a guess that unless they were the first unit that came out to for Protectorate and everyone picked them up, I would guess they weren't as used of a unit.
I would agree.
So Privateer Brass has this collection of, I think, 4 to 5 sculpts sitting to the side. This is your unit that they're not selling.
And they've probably got a lot of pewter sitting on the shelves that's already made.
Right, exactly.
Like,
so
what
the unit attachment did for them is they could sculpt one model or two in the case of, you know, standards and the officer duos that other units are getting. You sculpt one model and you can then, I don't know how to put it, basically that drives sales of the rest of the unit.
Yeah, you all of a sudden you have made a mediocre or lackluster unit a must-have unit, so to speak, for a lot of people.
And it's an interesting strategy because as opposed to a 40K method where you would just put out a new codex where we're going to change the values for you for, you know, theory machine or whatever you want to call it. Instead of that, we'll just go ahead and give you this new option, which instead now changes their meta value.
And let's also look at it from this aspect. I'm a player. I bought Zealots because I liked them. And now they're going to come out with the unit attachment. Basically, it is, in some instances, like a completely different unit. Like, kind of made that example of the long gunners. Not so much with the Zealots, but I would much rather buy a single attachment than rebuy, reassemble, and repaint an entire unit.
Exactly.
By any chance, does anybody know what the difference or what how much time lagged after Prime until Escalation came out?
Not offhand.
About a year, I would
guess. Not years, certainly. So they probably have – PP probably has a very long development cycle in play. They know what models are coming out one, probably two or more books from now. So odds are they knew the model there was coming out. Whether or not they thought the Zealots were going to be a good model for people to buy, it's sort of – there's a risk built in there that they have to worry about, I think.
True.
What's going to happen to that unit that doesn't have the UA yet?
Do you like the fact that the UA doesn't come out with the unit? With the exception of the allies, have you guys liked the fact that they – put space between them?
I kind of do, because it makes me feel like, oh, I got sort of another unit, in a sense.
I was going to say pretty much the exact same thing. It also changes the meta.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Zealots, I'm going to use an example, and this might not be the case. Zealots swing in the meta as they're released initially. Then they kind of fade out as other stuff, new toys, you know, come out. The Miles Bear is released. They swing right back in the meta. And in my instance, they eventually swung out again, because I played other stuff for a long time. I mean, I dropped them, but kind of encourages kind of like a cyclic cycle of models swinging in and out of popularity, which I think is great because we've mentioned it before. I think on the etiquette show, maybe, how much we like variety.
Mm-hmm. There's sort of a limit to that, though. I mean, unless they plan on giving half a dozen units, unit attachments to each unit, eventually it's not going to swing anymore because of the units, unit attachments.
Right.
So that theory is great for a couple of cycles, but what happens after that?
Well, if the current trend holds, I mean, every book they're going to release a unit or two and an attachment or two, so they're always going to stay ahead.
I meant for that particular unit, though.
Oh, well, yeah, sure. Well, you look at the trenchers; they got what, two different types of units, attachments.
Yeah.
So did the Winter Guard, the attachment, and the weapon attachment. I mean, maybe they do something like that, and that's another thing. We're talking kind of about attachments, but the solo that accompanies them also has a similar effect.
Yeah, there are lots of instances where they chose to do a solo instead of UAs, particularly for Crix, but also with like Grigorovich, for example. So those are UAs in a sense in how they fit into the army.
Yes.
Well, and also realize that most solos that have – we should probably find a name for them, either power solos or
synergy solos.
Synergy solos is a good one, that those guys are actually fairly good on their own. If you just gave me just the Sword Knight UA just as two guys, you know – Senor Badass and Honcho, they wouldn't be that great for their point value.
Yeah.
But it's only when they're attached to that Sword Knight value, okay, now we're pretty cool.
Gravis, on the other hand, I field him by himself.
Yeah, that's what I mean. But he's not a unit attachment.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm.
I can't think of a whole lot of unit attachments I would field just by themselves.
But the Monolith Bear.
Then again, I would like to see Brute Thralls run around on their own, too. So
they would actually be an interesting solo.
But they're weapon attachments, so not quite the same thing.
Yeah.
But anyway.
What about the units that do have attachments? How many of them you think really benefited from? We'll start with War Machine. First faction of the book is Signar.
And this is something that Stu actually brought up to me before we started recording that I had never sat down to look at it or even know. But apparently Signar has the most unit attachments of any faction in Hordes or War Machine.
Now, we're saying Easter. Unit attachments, but we're including weapon attachments in this, correct?
I wasn't, but okay.
Okay.
But I mean, think it still holds true.
We're talking about attachments
a lot here, and technically a weapon attachment isn't a unit attachment. It's a separate type. So, okay.
Sure. Even if you just go straight, plain unit attachment, by definition, we still have the most of any of the factions. So the first one, the Stormblades, they're a unit attachment. Actually, it's very good. It's just that it's very expensive. I think that's been one of the things with the Stormblades.
Would be better if they could field 10 men in that unit.
Absolutely, yeah. They are, you know, they're only a 6-man unit. You can't fill it up to a full 10. If you could do that, it would probably be, you know, it would be better. It's just sort of an odd unit to have that way. Probably my favorite of the unit attachments is the Trencher unit attachment. I think that that did a lot for Trenchers. Just, you know, the varying abilities that they have are really good. Probably the biggest one, my favorite, is the ability for them to basically advance, dig in, and perform a combat action.
Cautious advance.
Because that's one of the bad things. In a quick game, if you're only, you know, you're working with 3 or 4 rounds, a round without dig in is bad. It can be, especially at first, so that's a nice one. The long gunner unit attachment, I said it a little bit before. We can go into it more when we get to your list, Stu, but I personally don't like the unit attachment myself. That's all I'm going to say for now. I'll talk about it later. Some of the newer ones, the Arcane Tempest Gun Mages have a new unit attachment. Haven't played with it yet, but from what I've read, I think it's going to be interesting to play with. Just, it'll just have to see the points cost. Again, another very expensive unit. You know, the Gun Mages, they're expensive for what they are. The Sword Knight's also another one of the new ones. I think the unit attachment is going to be very helpful to this unit. I got the Sword Knights long ago. Actually, they were the first unit I ever painted. And then I never, hardly ever used them. Well, my problem was I tried to use them. I tried to use them with some flanking, and I never could get it pulled off right because Signar just doesn't have...
Your initial complaint was you didn't have any cheap infantry models.
Yeah.
And they were as close as you could get, and you wanted to try and get them to work.
Right, and they just kept their defensive line, which is not like shield wall. Just, it wouldn't work, so they would die. Whereas everybody else that had the shield wall, doesn't matter if you shoot a couple of them here or there, they still have the shield wall. If you know, but that's, again, so that was my problem with them. I think the unit attachment is going to give some nice abilities there that are going to make them more effective and more fun to use. I've used them once in a game like that, and it was a lot better. The next thing that we really need, another light jack with reach. That's not an arc node, and that would make that unit very, very deadly, I think, very good.
Absolutely. Yep.
I may be missing some, but I think those are the highlights of Signar, the good and the bad. And then, like I said, we'll talk about long gunners later. So
there's the precursors, UA, if you want to.
Yeah, the precursors. Allies. You know, I have the full unit of precursors and the unit attachment. I've never used them.
Really?
I just have not used them. I want to, but I don't know.
I wonder if those would be fun to paint.
I'm looking forward to it myself.
Huh?
Said I'm looking forward to it myself.
I've got them, and I've thought about the paint job on them, and since they are knights with a little bit of cloth, it's almost like painting mini jags, which I like painting more so anyway because they're easier.
I almost threw them in that list to use as like a Carrix kind of thing for the long gunner.
Mm-hmm. So that's pretty much all I have to say. How about
Protectorate is next.
Protectorate.
That's me. I get to talk more. Well, I think that our first unit attachment is pretty much the most stereotypical unit attachment as far as making a unit just dumb. And that is the Monolith Bear. I mean, let's face it, Zealots plus the Monolith Bear for 84 points is ridiculous good.
And that's all 10, right?
That's all 10.
That is insane.
And that's kind of why I stopped fielding them for a while. It was just, they became the easy button on dealing with most situations. Our next unit attachment was the Temple Flame Guard. I love the Temple Flame Guard. They were my replacement for the Zealots for a while. Because the 6-inch walk, meaning a 12-inch run with reach, let me tie up all sorts of things. I actually didn't shield wall very much, and I still don't shield wall that often. I think that their defense 13 is decent enough that they're okay on their own. The unit attachment made them amazing in my eyes. Auto fire, causing terror is great against some armies. Iron Zeal, if I decide to stack it with shield wall, is dumb. I just think they are a very, very good unit. My last unit attachment that I have is also very, very dumb, very, very evil. And that's the Chieftain and Guide for the Idrians. I love the Idrians. They're probably my favorite unit. I remember reading on the forums how people were talking about, why would anybody from the Protector want these guys? They're so overpriced. As soon as I bought them, I put them together and threw them in an army and took them to a tournament. And they just did fantastic. They're great with the unit attachment. Advanced deploy, even the dig in once per turn, which they're only going to need one turn probably.
Once per game, it's our mini feat.
And, you know, intercept and prey is just, it's just mean.
Now, I just have to break in. You mentioned that they're so expensive. What is the points cost of a full unit plus the unit attachment?
Again, yes, this is the Protector perspective. They are 154.
154, yeah.
It's a Thunderhead.
Right. And my full unit of trenchers with everything is I believe, approaching 190.
You also have the weapon attachment.
Oh, right. And I think that may be without that, though.
Oh, okay.
So, again, yeah. I just wanted a little perspective. Right. I knew it was cheaper, but so yeah, when you say that, it's just like, yeah, for me to do that with my units, it's always expensive.
I think that the Edrians are arguably one of my favorite unit right now for the Protector. Just, they have great shooting, they have great melee, and they have great area deniability.
Now, you've mentioned two of the ones that are really good, and I thought I'll break it now because I think I know the answer. And around the table, what do you think is the best unit attachment that's been out so far
for all factions?
I think for all factions. And let's keep it a War Machine right now.
The one that had the biggest impact or the one that's the best?
Both. Well, just,
I think the Monolith Bear is the definitive biggest impact.
And I agree with you. I think that
a turn of invulnerability and +4 defense, +4 armor, someone dies is huge. Mm-hmm.
I think that's the first one that comes to people's mind, yeah.
I mean, it turned them from a highly aggressive but highly disposable unit,
which they still are.
It's a speed bump unit.
Major problem where you have to think of specifically ways around them.
Right.
Yeah, I thought that was going to be the case. I just want to see if anybody had a different opinion. But yeah, I totally agree.
I think that it's quite possible for the Edrians to have a bigger impact on the game.
Mm-hmm.
But it depends highly on deployment, initiative, and scenario.
Well, I think psychologically maybe not nowadays, but psychologically people think of the Monolith Bear. But I've also heard people complain that the Edrians aren't up to snuff with the UA, at least, which I think is absolutely crazy. And so I think on the field, I would probably rather face the Monolith Bear than the Edrians with the UA.
What snuff are we talking?
Probably. Yeah, well, let's be honest. The Edrians are fairly easy to kill, especially with AoEs, and they're going to be up there in the front, so they're going to be easily targetable. So they are still, you could kill them to get through them if you have to. Cador is next.
Stu, you played Cador for a little while.
There's a couple of unit attachments there. There's everything fun for the Winter Guard. The Bob and Weave can actually become something that can be quite fun, especially with a couple of other effects stacked onto it as well. The Rocketeer, which is just... Anyway, the Rocketeer is definitely... I mean, he's got a big beard, and if you painted him like Santa Claus, I don't think you'd be wrong. Let's see here. The Iron Fang UA, which...
I love that UA.
Took the Iron Fang from a pretty decent melee unit into an absolutely devastating melee unit.
Furious Charge, plus their what? P plus S 13 on their spears?
And the ability to, after they made all their attacks, come back into Shield Wall?
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. I mean, you want to talk about a move right out of that 300 movie or something. I mean, that was pretty much it, where they just came out, did their damage, came back in, went, now what, motherfuckers?
Yeah.
Is it true?
I can't think of any other particular UAs. There's the Kayazi, the underboss, which, yeah, that's another eye-raising, surprising one. I was playing a game against, I think it was Ray, Neo Morte. I was playing Morton Abra, and I had left some focus on him because it was getting down to the wire here. And his Kayazi popped that mini feat, and medium base let more models surround him, and just with that bleed out, I mean, just the damage it just circumvents everything across the board that I could do to prevent damage to her and just bled her like a stuck pig.
I think that Ventilate is awful for Warcasters, and especially, I mean, they only need one turn of acrobatics to get in there.
Yeah, I mean, with the underboss, you get that acrobatics, and it's just, I mean, they will sometimes come out of nowhere to go in there and just beat the crap out of something.
Man, Epic Vlad feats on Kayazi. That's horrendous.
Wow.
But yeah, I think that's an underused unit with a unit attachment. I think they're very good.
We see it quite a bit around here, at least I do. I don't know if that's the way it is in other places, but people seem to love them here if they actually own the models.
And they're fantastic for merc contracts, which is why I don't see them in enough.
Hmm.
That's true. Who can field them merc-wise?
I'm guessing high or four stars.
Well, four-star, which is going to be the premier competitive merc list.
Okay. So which one of those do you think is the best? Personally, I almost say the
I honestly think IFP. It's the Iron Fangs. They're the most overall. They provide the biggest punch. They provide the biggest, you know, the biggest hassle to your opponent. And they can control a heck of a lot of the board. The Kayazi are really nice because they provide a nice surprise. But if you really do take your time, I think that surprise can be negated somewhat. Let's see here. The Winter Guard are just... it's a good unit attachment. But I think the Winter Guard themselves suffer from the Trencher Syndrome in that by the time you've given the Winter Guard everything they need to be a really nice unit, you spent a lot of points that you probably wanted to spend elsewhere.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
About correct, Josh. This is going to be a short list.
It will be. We only have a few. The Mechanithralls actually get two, the Necrosurgeon and the Brute Thrall. I know, Stu, you love the Brute Thrall.
Yes.
I do not. It's only performed for me once or twice, and it hasn't done that well. I think most of the people who have ever seen or tried to use the Necrosurgeon will agree that it's not worth the 31 points it costs. I mean, that's almost another complete unit of Mechanithralls, almost.
Yeah.
I've had it work for me once, and that was against you, Dave, in an old Steamroller game we played. It helped me keep a point, and in the end, that probably wasn't too worth it. Cool idea, cool model, doesn't do much for me. I love the Stitch Thralls, though, the sculpts. I love the sculpts.
Yeah, those are nice.
Carrying bags of body parts. Like I said, the Brute Thrall, it gives the Mechanthralls a little bit of help, but on a medium base, that almost takes away everything you can do because it's just such a big target.
Yeah, a lot of times the support unit attachment pieces you keep in the back so they stay safe. Brute Thrall doesn't get that benefit.
Yeah.
That's just why I love him, because he's either... I mean, the Mechanthralls, at least the way I've been playing them, are either... They're a potent threat to anything that's going to be up in the front lines. They're either that or they're bullet catchers. Which means, okay, you're either not shooting at them and you're hitting the Biothralls, but now you're going to have a problem in a turn when they're engaged with you, or you're hitting them, but you're not hitting the Biothralls, which you know next turn are going to come up anyway, and you feed them in waves. And the Brute Thrall, to me, is just more of... It's just that more personified, you know.
It's a threat overload. It's another thing you have to worry about.
Well, it's something that you have to worry about on top of just the Mechanithralls. The Necrosurgeon, the only time I can actually see them being useful is if you're playing in a Scar list or some other list that requires a lot of sacrifices to be made. It's the only time I could see them actually being able to be worthwhile by leaving a unit back, so to speak, to allow it to keep refreshing models for me to sacrifice.
For me, the problem isn't that you even have to wait a turn to use the corpse tokens and whatnot. It's just that she's so squishy. And not only that, whenever she dies, the Stitch Thralls are immediately removed from the table. So you don't even keep these useless models on the table that might be used to block a charge lane or something.
Yeah.
So it's just... I just see so nothing good about
what,
it.
What if she had the ability that we've seen other people have, where if she took a hit, a Mechanithral could jump in the way? Maybe even with the rule that it wouldn't leave a corpse token.
Possibly. I might see that. I still think she costs too much for that, but that would at least be an improvement, I think. And frankly, I don't know why that kind of rule didn't go in. I guess they hadn't thought of it by that point, because that didn't come around until later.
Well, no, Terminus had it basically with Sac Pawn.
No. That's true. That was specific to range attacks. Yeah, I guess so.
So well,
are you talking more like the Alexia type of thing, like with her thralls?
No, well, he's talking about something where you sack. I take a hit, I sack this model instead.
Right.
And actually, Terminus didn't come until a book later anyway.
Oh, that's true.
So,
but I mean, Alexia can do that.
She uses it to suck wounds. In a way. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's something similar.
So would you say that Necrosurgeon is pretty much the anti-monolith bear?
Yeah, in a lot of ways. I would think even if they just made it to where making a new thrall didn't cost a star action would be so much more potent, because at least then the Mechanithralls could keep running.
That's really the big thing. It's a star action, so the unit cannot run or charge. Now, we do have the Sea Witch on the Satixus Raiders unit. I'm a big fan of Satixus Raiders, and I really like the Sea Witch.
You like the hot little woman, huh?
Well, that goes without saying. Not as much as Pat. But she doesn't cost that much relative to the unit size. With her in there, it's 125 points for the whole unit.
That's not bad at all.
That's something I can spend. I don't mind that. Now with people bringing more jacks to the table, especially now that Legends is out with the unique jacks, the more unique jacks, I'm a big fan of them, because obviously they do the damage to the caster if you damage the jacks and so on. If you're not familiar with it, they're lacerator whips. If they damage a jack, then the controlling warcaster takes a point of damage.
But they have to do damage, and jacks have high armor.
They do, but if you're charging, that gives you the extra die. And I think they're a power strength 9 with a whip, but there is the power swell that the Sea Witch has once per turn, or once per game. It's her mini feat. It allows an extra damage die on attacks.
Oh, cool.
So
I think the other option that is often ignored is just light jacks, which typically have much less armor, and especially with those options mentioned,
My light jacks have just as high armor.
And the problem with light jacks for me in general, the problem I've had is that light jacks tend to have higher defense.
Sure.
And the mat is not great on the sticks. It's 6 for a regular trooper.
They pair up really well with Scar. Combine that with Backlash, and that's
that and Dark Guidance to let them hit. It's a huge great combo. They are squishy. They're only command 9, even with the Sea Witch in the unit. So I've had them run on more than one occasion. The boxcars always seem to come up whenever they need to make that test. But I still love them. I think she's a great addition. She has 3 spells she can use. One to give Pathfinder and Camouflage.
Stance Order?
Coiled Stance Order is kind of interesting. You have to advance, and you can't attack, but it gives you higher defense versus melee attacks. So you sit there and you wait for the enemy.
And don't you also get Repose or something like that?
If they miss you, you do get to make another attack. But again, you don't have a higher mat or anything like that. So it's very situational, like a lot of these orders are.
You can tie up a line, though, with that.
You can. But again, you have to compare that to, well, should I just charge?
Right.
And you do get the higher defense, but still.
Right.
You know. So I love the Sea Witch. Crix doesn't have any more UAs, but we have a couple UA solos if we want to get into those here. Tartarus for the Banes and Rengrave for the Revenant.
Do you want to do a second pass of those? Because we didn't talk about ours.
We can do a second pass.
You and go backwards.
Okay, we'll do them here.
That's fine with me.
Tartarus, Bane Lord Tartarus. He helps out the Banes, both kinds, Knights and Thralls.
Oh, I hate his replenishing thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he has a Death Toll, which is an ability on his side, or his axe, which used to be Madrex, I believe. Is that how it was?
No. Yes. Wrathrock. Wrathrock used to be Tartarus's.
Yes, I think that's correct, yeah. So there's a cool fluff thing there behind the scenes.
I'm just waiting for Madrex to steal Tartarus' axe again and starts making more Kreel Warriors.
As long as he gives the old one back, Tartarus Ricochet is hilarious.
Oh, man.
So,
what's it?
So, yeah, Tartarus goes up, he kills an enemy living model, and he makes another Bane that he can put in a unit that's on the table. On top of that, he can take a unit of Bane Thralls or Bane Knights, and he can teleport them across, beckon them to him. They can't move after that, but he can still... That maneuverability is something that you don't always see on a unit with speed 5.
Yeah, I've seen you yo-yo with them. Banes charge out, and you bring them back. Is it within 4 inches?
It's within his command range. A model and unit has to be within... Oh, I'm sorry. They have to be placed completely within 4 inches of him.
So they have to pack around him.
They do, but actually, that 4 inches away from him, that's not a small space. I've laid it on a table before, and it's... If you're just trying to put him right in front of him, it can get cramped. If you don't mind putting a couple behind him, that's not that bad. And occasionally, that's not a bad thing to do, because if you're charging, for example, the next turn, if you have the leader in the back or something, he can just run around or whatever. But it's enough space, I should say, to beckon them.
It's within 4 inches of his base.
It has to be, the models have to be, the entire unit must be placed completely within 4 inches of him.
And Tartarus himself, 16 or 17 armor?
He is a 16 armor. He has Bane Knight
Stealth and Dark Shroud.
Dark Shroud with a reach weapon. And
so
8 wounds.
Dark Shroud plus Curse. He can set up anybody for destruction on his own or for the Banes to do it.
Yeah, his Curse, which again helps the mat for not only himself, but for any Banes, which could use that extra 2. It lowers the defense on the, or gives a +2 to the attacks on friendly Banes, most friendly Banes around him.
Against action or anything.
No, it's an ability. So you can charge in, Curse, and then let the other guys go up. So it's great. He helps them quite a bit. He is a great solo. I have no qualms about him at all.
Yeah, I think, again, like I mentioned before, of the 4 character solos that came out for the factions, I remember the discussion. I believe that Tartarus is the best of the 4. I think Dave might disagree with me a little bit.
I do. But
there were 5, actually.
Were there 5?
Rengrave is the other one.
Okay.
Superiority.
So, what's Rengrave?
Rengrave is the Revenant crew. He's actually the captain of the Atramentus in the fluff. He was the first Revenant created by Torek.
That bitch needs to get back on his ship.
And he can make more pirates by destroying any living models, very similar to what Tartarus can do. He also has his own type of curse, lowers command, and he can sack other revenants to heal or to prevent himself from being destroyed. But this is actually better than even what Alexia does, because regardless of how much damage is done to Ringgrave, he needs to sack only one pirate to stay alive.
It should also be noted that the Black Squall also removes orders.
Yes, it does, which is something that I don't see people use too often deliberately to try to cancel an order. Which it can be a strong, strong effect.
Yep. I think you're also forgetting the Reign of Terror.
Oh, my God. Well, it doesn't happen too often, but yeah, it's absolutely awesome. Why don't you describe what that is, too?
Is this what I think it is?
It's
Reign of Terror is super fun time. If a unit has ever had the misfortune to flee...
Within
his command range, he and all the friendly Revenant units
within his control range are invincible. Yes. They cannot take damage for a turn.
Oh my God.
Or they cannot be damaged for one turn.
So hilarious.
I've had it happen maybe 3 times, and it's beautiful every time.
Then there's also Swordsmaster, Insult to Injury.
So he can take 2 swipes and then shoot somebody else, even ignoring intervening models. He's a great package. He's another great model.
I don't see him too much. I think because the Revenants are so expensive.
I've seen some people take him without Revenants. I personally wouldn't, but he's a great super solo, really.
I don't know. For 28 points, you can justify him as at least a cheap hand cannon.
Cador.
There's the Khuldun, the Greylord Khuldun that just came out, which Tim talked about quite frequently, and it really is a fantastic
Battle power Wizard solo. Alone, giving Battle Wizard to those
guys,
yeah.
There's Kovnik Joe, Joseph Grigorovich, I believe is his name, his actual name, who does give them some very interesting speeches, like For the Motherland.
Which is,
others.
Yeah, I like that. If they die, they get to make a shot first. So,
and if multiple die at once, they do get to CRA.
That's hilarious.
Which is awesome.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's pretty fun. Let's see, there's also Markov, which made the Iron Fang Ulan. I mean, it gave him exactly what they needed.
Fearless. Exactly. And his stupid concussion pike.
Oh, yeah, and that pike that just makes the AoE right there when he hits.
And if you crit so hit, funny. You knock down everything in it.
Oh, it's so fun.
Yeah, that's bad.
Let's see here,
Fenris.
Another, yes, Fenris. Fenris, which just, I mean, it allows you to make an expensive but kind of amusing Doom Reaver army that is kind of brown. It really is brown trousers time for a lot of people if it gets an assault in fast and furious.
Yeah, you got to take those guys out quick. Luckily, there's not too many of them, but they're dangerous.
And Spell Ward. Please don't forget Spell Ward. It's on there, and I've seen a lot of people ignore it, including me before by accident. So
I actually failed to mention Derek Wraith. I was concentrating on Superior Lord so much. Derek Wraith makes Soul Hunter pseudo light cav. He's an undead commander, and he can cast spells on his own. He's a great support piece, and he makes Soul Hunters better than they were. And if you didn't think Soul Hunters were great before, hopefully this will be a reason for you to try them out now, because they work really well together.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, the fact that he gives him that post-action move is huge.
Absolutely.
Well, and plus, when I first saw him come out, I mean, I was like, wow, free Hellfire? A free casting of Hellfire? You bet I'll take it.
I love the one-inch move, Deathride.
Yeah, that's after fantastic. Playing him a couple times, I use Deathride more often than not, because that lets the Bile Thralls run 11 inches as opposed to 10.
Yep.
That extra inch makes all the difference.
So, on my side of the table, I don't know if this counts or not, because it's not a unit, but Vilmon does make the Paladins a little bit better, lets you field an extra one. Given Vilmon's the rest of his abilities, I don't think that what he does for Paladins is much to speak of, but it's another effect, and it does kind of, you can run them next to each other so they can't be knocked down, which with stuff like the Harbinger is great because she can save them and they don't get knocked down.
Yeah.
So they're good, but they don't benefit any of the whole unit effects. You can't affect, for example, both Paladins with him at once with a unit spell. Gravis is good all around fun. I have so many exemplar units now that there's a lot of stuff that he can get, what are they called, Grim Resolve tokens from. He's not bad. He makes Avengers better on the charge. He himself has a pretty mean charge. I don't know what I want to say about him. He's just solid. I don't think he's great. And I think he, of the mounted solos, is probably the one that you would field by himself the most. Maybe Markov.
Really?
I don't think he needs the tokens to do anything. He's just really all around good, and he's not expensive.
I mean, I often give Derek without Soul Hunters frequently because he's just fantastic.
Probably I see Derek most by Crix players who already field Soul Hunters. So,
given that he does help other models by using Deathride, and I can't remember what it's otherwise called, but helping absorb damage more, he helps things other than Soul Hunters, so I can actually see
that's him. True.
Beyond Death,
thank you.
Yeah.
All right, so the first one for Signar that I'll talk about is Maxwell Finn. He's the Uber Trencher. I love Finn. He does a lot of really good things for the Trenchers. The biggest one, I think, being is if you can get Finn where his Trenchers can see him, he gives them a +2 to their Rat and Mat. And that's really huge. I mean, that's basically, and that can also stack with their aiming bonus.
Rat 8 or 7 when they
I think they're Rat 5
they're
to begin
five
with.
Base, yeah.
So they can be 7, and if they're standing still, they can be Rat 9.
Ooh, that's
the aiming
shooting
bonus.
Warcasters.
Yeah. And then if you throw in the leaders or the unit, the UA attachment, you've got a sniper, they start at 7. So they are shooting at Rat 11. Both the lieutenant and the sniper are, you know, Rat 11 if they're standing still. That's big. So that right there is probably makes him worth the points. Other than that, he can also field promote. Your trencher leader dies, Finn can say, you there, you're in charge now.
Congratulations, you just beat Sergeant.
I mean, you know, there's not a lot of that in the game. I know we've talked about this in the past. There are some people that can do that for other people on the table, but that is pretty huge for trenchers.
You know who needs more field promotion?
Who's that?
The Protectorate. Specifically choir and zealots.
Yeah, we don't
I don't think
it.
You can do field anointment.
It's a big long right. It takes hours. It's not enough time to do it on the battlefield.
Maybe the guy with the book.
I need a solo who carries around anointed oil that he can field promote.
See, Finn just has to rip a patch off a dead guy, hand it to another guy, and say, "Here, you're a lieutenant." Not
you. I've got a good feeling about you.
There you go.
That other guy had no concept of it.
No,
you. Confidence.
I love it.
Go in there. Ooh, he didn't last.
That is beautiful.
They just get the Penny Arcade rooms.
That's right.
Well, it's okay. That's the people in the will.
The ninjas.
The other thing about Finn that I really like is, he was made to put a boker out in the middle of the table. He's possibly one of my favorite. I put him on the table. When I put a boker on the table, I've almost always have Finn as the client. He's great because he has tough. You know, he's got eight boxes to begin with. So he's relatively hard to hit. If he moves, that's another thing about him. He can dig in like a trencher, but if he moves, his defense goes up by two.
Dodge, is that what that is?
Sorry. The dodge.
Is it dodge or dodgy?
He's 13 defense. He's normally 13 defense. If he actually moves, he's 15 defense. It's not quite as good as dug in, but hey, it's pretty good.
Yeah, and even if he's already stuck in melee, you say he turns a little bit.
Yeah, right.
Plus two, yeah. Done.
And he's got what works. So if you can run him up into, you know, a big group of enemies, he can take shots at. Or I'm sorry, he can swing his knife, his combat knife at all of them. Anybody within through full 360, and he's got a pretty good rat. I believe his mat is seven or eight. I think it may be eight actually. So he's actually a combat machine. I usually don't get him up there in hand to hand combat, but if he does, he can take a lot out. It's just, it's hard to get him with a lot of people around him, because if it's on your turn and you run him into people, you'll get one or two, maybe three if you're lucky.
Most people aren't willing, because
he doesn't have reach.
Kill everyone.
What about that amazing range on his weapon?
Oh, now you hit the downfall. The one thing that I bemoaned, and everybody else did, about poor Finn, they finally give somebody in Signar a frickin' machine gun. They give it to, other than the trencher chain gunner, they give it to Finn, but it has a range of 8.
The Sentinel has been out since Prime. That's got a chain gun.
Well, I'm talking about like an
individual unit.
Yeah. So, well, and also the Sentinel has 10-inch range. Finn doesn't. So, yeah,
it's
the 2-inch, you know, 8-inch range is just, you would have expected. I mean, everything
it's
else.
3 inches more than I can throw my grenades, buddy.
Which says
yeah,
something
it's
about
a gun.
His bullets can't drift either.
Yeah.
So to be fair,
it's a machine gun, for God's sake.
Wait,
I mean, everything else that goes at
I
least 10 inches.
I can his machine gun and put my grenades in it.
I mean, my trenchers can fire 10 inches. Long gunners are 14. You know, it's just, you know, whatever. So he's short range. So the way you have to play with Finn, it really changed him. I mean, if he could shoot 10 inches, it would make, I mean, it would be a huge difference.
Well, what about the fact
because
that he's going to be up in front of your trenchers?
Well, and I think that's why they did it. They want him to be up in front so that he can be seen. You know, the downfall of that obviously is he's up front. He can be a target. Now they counteract that with the dodge and the dig in. So, you know, and tough. So he is fairly survivable. And oftentimes, I'd say more often than not, the tough goes off on him. So he stays alive at least one more round to be the client. And of course, you know, he's got his boker, you know, the honorary trencher, the boker trencher is there to guard him as well. So I love Finn. He's good. Enough about him. The other solo that we've got, the character solo, is Catherine Lattermore. She's the Stormlance character solo. I haven't used her a whole lot yet, but I do like her, and I like what she can do. Obviously, she's, as far as the other ones go, she's not like Derek Wraith or even your Gravis. I wouldn't really see fielding her alone too much. You could, but I think what she does for the Stormlances is, I mean, it's fairly centered on, you know, helping them. Like, one thing she can do with them is, as long as they're within her command range, the Stormlances can charge over their own bases. So they don't have to have, you know, you can draw a line of sight and they can charge over their own bases, which is, that's a huge deal when you're talking with large base models. Also, all the other things, she generates, you know, lightning arcs from the Stormlance models, as long as they're, again, if they're within, I believe, 5 inches of her when they shoot their ranged attack. So that'll generate, you know, some more POW 10 hits on enemies. There's a lot of that kind of thing that just, it's synergy for the Stormlances. Now, with that being said, I think you could field her alone, but I think that she's more geared to helping the Stormlances. And there's, unless I'm wrong about this, there's nothing else that she does that helps other models like the Derek Wraith can do. It doesn't really give benefits to other non-Stormlance models.
Is she a commander?
Yes. Actually, the only ability that she does have that will benefit others is she is a commander. So there is that. So, and which is beneficial. Commanders are always good to have on the table. But I think otherwise, she's just really, I mean, her abilities are – as you just read through them, they are stacked right to working with the Stormlances, which, I mean, it makes sense. She's essentially a Stormlance. She's kind of like a Stormlance officer, really. And those are the only two that we have. Yeah.
The only one that we haven't covered so far is the mercenary, Stannis Brocker. Mm-hmm. I mean, he gives the Cav Forfend. He gives flanking with Steelheads and the Cav. So, I mean, if you're going to field a mercenary force, especially Magus's agenda, he's phenomenal. He's not a Dragoon, so he's not survivable. On the other hand, he's cheaper. I wouldn't say he's bad to field on his own. He's a roving gun with a high speed. He's decent. He's not that great, but if you need something to run off and go on a flank, he could do it.
He's a bad man.
He is. And I almost have him painted. I like him.
I almost have him painted, too.
I think that's it for War Machine.
I think so. Hordes?
Hordes. First, Trolls.
Trolls.
Unit attachments and solos. Well, you got the Stone Scribe.
Elder.
And the Creel Warrior unit, as well as the Caber Tosser.
Yeah. Well, starting with the Elder. Jeez, he can make people attack or hurt things that can only be hurt by magic.
He can give Wraithbane
plus two strength.
I can't remember the third one.
I don't think it matters because he's already earned his place in the army.
Yeah, cannot move.
Cannot be moved?
He cannot be moved, yeah.
Okay.
Which was a pain when I was playing Gorton against it.
I'll bet. So he's phenomenal. The plus two strength and the hurting magic stuff on itself, especially for a Horde's army.
Yeah.
Great.
Caber Tosser? Piper dude?
I like the Caber Tosser.
He's pretty neat.
Just throwing that caber is hilarious.
I like the fact their cabers aren't made of wood. They're made of stone pillars.
Yeah. I'm entertained by the fact that if he throws the caber, no one can pick it up. But if he dies and sets it down gently with his dying breath, the guy next to him can pick it up, but only within an inch.
Well, when he throws it, you know, it's with such force it shatters.
Oh, okay.
Whereas when it's just right there, he kind of falls and he cradles it as he dies, saying, oh, take on this and fight for the Creelan.
All right, so what else do they have? They have the hero. That guy's dumb.
Wow. Hero is almost great on his own.
I was about to say he's like the war chief. He doesn't need his unit to be good. Not that he's bad with them by any means. I mean, people hated fighting against champions to begin with, giving them the solo. And he doesn't really do much for the champions, but they just do so much for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Usually by dying,
which is hard enough to do.
Yeah.
What? That's it for them, right?
Back to the Creels, we have the Piper Standard Bearer.
Which gives them a 5-inch skirmish formation size, which is nice.
Right.
Lets them cover a bigger area. It gives them a mini feat of lets them basically super tough, a 4, 5, or 6, which making a successful tough roll.
And on top of that,
he can't be, the Standard Bearer can't be knocked down due to Defiance.
Nor can anybody who can see him.
Mm-hmm.
And they ignore other models in the unit for drawing line of sight.
And is it all medium-based models or just their
own? It might be.
I think it's something about medium-based. Not only that, he also has the instep, I think is what it's called, the special action. Everybody moves an inch.
The Piper.
Oh, is it Piper? One of them lets everybody move an inch, which may not seem like much, but whenever you have everybody spread out within 5 inches, that's a lot of opening lanes and closing lanes for you there.
Yeah.
Especially with the 5-inch gap now that you
can see this unit attachment nor the cabers much for the simple reason of there's champions.
That, and I think that the actual monetary cost of Creel Warriors is very prohibitive for a lot of troll players.
That's true.
Yeah, I mean, that's 13 models, I think, you can have in one unit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, AK has
that
it,
is easily over $100 US retail.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that it for the trolls?
I believe so.
Mm-hmm. What's the second faction, the Circle?
Circle, I think, typically. We have the Wolves of Ouroboros UA, and upcoming we have the Druid Overseer UA, which just came out. And
the White Mane and the Shaman.
White Mane and the Shaman. So, say with the Wolves of Ouroboros, it's a banner, and I can't remember, a hunter, hunt master,
it's
master
a totem
of the hunt.
Standard or something.
Yeah. Something like that. And it's the a totem of the banner. And, yeah.
It's effectively a standard and a leader.
That's exactly what it is. They have a mini feat, which allows an extra die of damage, and if a model in the unit destroys a model or participates in an attack that destroys a model, they can move their speed to sort of regroup, similar to what the Iron Fangs can do, but not quite. There's no shield wall or anything like that. Also, he lets them, in that same movement, he can let them ignore each other's bases, and it allows more maneuverability. So I like the Wolves by themselves. With UA, I think they're even cooler. I usually don't take them without the UA because it just adds so much, and it's more bodies on the table. The Shaman for the Tharn Ravagers are really, really like. He requires heart tokens to really do his cool spells, and since he doesn't start with one, you either have to get him up there to kill somebody, or you have to kill one of your own models. But assuming he has a heart token, the spells that he have are really cool. He can allow them to take an extra attack. I think Brutality is his mini feat, where they can move after attacking once per game. And he has a couple other things. I can't remember what they are off the top of my head. But he adds a lot of survivability to them, not only because he's an extra model, but because he allows them to clear out more enemy models. He also gives them advanced move, so before the game, they can move up their speed 6 inches. Lets them get that charge off a lot of times, which is what they really need, because they can't hit otherwise half the time. Who am I missing? The Druid Overseer, who just came out. He's pretty cool. I haven't had a chance to use him, so I can't speak about him tactically. He has a few spells. Nudge, a healing spell, and he has a third one. I can't remember what it is. It's pretty cool. He allows, once per game, he has a mini feat as well. He allows the entire unit to each cast a second spell. Actually, he allows them to do a second star action, which essentially means they're going to be casting two spells. He can't let them do the devouring twice since it's an order, but he is an extra model that adds to the devouring's damage and hit, so that's pretty nice. Other than that, he has Beastmaster, which allows him to force a beast in his command range.
I don't know how this is going to play out. I'll be interested to see how happy I am that there is a Jack Marshall equivalent.
Well, the problem with it is that you can't leech if you use it in right. command, and that's really the other half of it that you need. So I don't know. I haven't played with it, so I can't really speak about it. We have the White Mane Thern Ravager, solo, pseudo UA. I like him a lot. He really makes the Thern Ravagers damage whatever the heck they want. Because of him, I had just two or three Thern Ravagers completely destroy a healthy Carnivian once. He allows them to just rip through whatever. He's pretty maneuverable because he charges more whenever he's charging a living model. He has leap. If he has a heart token, he can jump over a front rank to then charge in the back. Or I don't know if he can charge after he leaps, but either way, he can leap and reach and lots of boxes, and he's just crazy go nuts. So I love him.
Is that all yours?
I believe so.
I think Scorn is next.
Scorn's going to be real fast.
Yeah, it is.
Because it's just the Praetorians. I mean, unless you want to count Makeda, but
yeah,
she's not
so
really
much
a synergy solo at all. The Praetorians, Standard Bearer gives them, well, Fearless, which is in Hordes actually does mean something, as opposed to War Machine, where everyone and their mother seems to be Fearless, including your dog sometimes too. But Fearless is a pretty big thing to give a Hordes unit. They have the mini feat where they essentially get, they can just do an auto point, which is huge, combined with their normal ability called Follow Through. After they kill a model, they can move, I think it's up to 2 inches. And it's actually kind of funny, because now that we're talking about it, I'm seeing a real move towards this, all these little bonus inches here and there. Now that I think about it, just kind of trying to make things more maneuverable, and that's actually kind of an interesting idea. Other than that, it's another pair of swords, it's another leader, it's two more souls on the table. That's pretty much what Scorn needs. But that's it for them.
Okay. All right. The Legion, the other best faction. For unit attachment-wise, we have the Archer unit attachment.
Second best UA, in my opinion, in the game.
Poison Arrows, Arcing Fire.
Extra Shot?
Extra Shot if they sack their movement. Yeah, that's full of win. The Archers were, I think, kind of vanilla before. Not that they were bad. I mean, Concentrated Valley is awesome, but I think it actually just gives them a lot to make them stand out even more. The other unit attachment is the Striders. Gives them a bushwhack. Gives them a second shot if they hit with the first. Lets them deny orders for some sort of early first turn shenanigans. Makes them fearless as long as the musician's on the table. I'm pretty sure, I have to look at the rules again, but if the musician dies, you can't pick up his horn. It's not like a standard.
It could be trained as an instrument. Not just anybody can play it.
Well, if you think about it, that's huge. That really allows you to play very risky and very aggressive with the Striders, because you walk up, make your shots, then, hey, no charging or running.
Right.
You know, that's pretty big.
But the running is big, but the charging not so much, because their armor is at the point where if you hit them, they're dead anyway. But, you know, if the musician dies, they have a good chance of fleeing, but they're not bad. However, you can also pair that with the Deathstalkers. Those solos are great. They also have rapid shot. They have Sniper, and if they hit, they can make all Striders in their command range move an inch, which includes a second Death Striker, because you could have two, or two units of Striders. So you could have 12, 13, 14, 16 Striders in your army up front doing this kind of shenanigans. However, Striders are expensive. I think it's 81, 82 points, maybe just 80 for six. I mean, we're talking almost Stormblade.
Expensive. Yeah, that's
the final, I guess, a helper unit that we have seen the rules for is the Warchief, who helps the warmongers. and the war spears, if we ever find out what those are. It's like Fen plus 2 to hit if it's in your line of sight, which is great for warmongers because that was only 6, and there is typically some higher defenses in hordes. So making that an 8 is very handy.
Where did we hear about the war spears?
The warmongers card says
that's right,
his rules for Inspire.
That's right.
So, I mean, he's good. On top of that, he's awesome on his own, especially with Ryas. So, I mean, we've talked about the Iron Chef before, so there's no need to talk about it again.
Did you see that game of Helm versus Neo?
Yep, we've talked about it.
Got up to, what, 30, 40, something like that?
It was dumb. It was disgusting.
Hilarious.
The final thing we don't know about, and there's been pictures put up on a Japanese website, is the Swordmaster, Abbot, and what is it? Let's pull it up. It's the Abbot and Champion, and I will read the description, because this is all we can go on. The hollowness of Blighted Swordsmen aligned naturally with the meditative discipline of sword mastery, allowing them to evade horror by concentrating solely on their skill. Those who embrace this new philosophy, the Abbots, kill as a form of meditation and are the greatest blade masters of their race. The Champions are their best students. When you look at the picture, which we'll put in the show notes, put a link to it, the Abbot is a single old guy. He's an old guy with a single sword, and he looks cool. And then the Champion is basically a dual-wielding swordsman. What's better than a Nis swordsman with one sword?
Two swords.
A Nis swordsman with two swords and probably some other cool abilities.
Yeah, he's got his finger up like he's saying, no, you didn't.
He does. So he's going to have some sword denial ability.
You know, when he starts using three blades, then get back to me, then I'll be impressed. That's all I'm going to say.
Did you ever see One Piece?
That's exactly where that came from.
Yeah.
So I think, I'll be honest, I think these are some of the best sculpted Nips that we've seen so far.
I'm not a fan of the Champion. I really like the Abbot. I think he's pretty cool. I think only because his sword is sheathed and he's not like in a warlike stance. He's got a cool pose, but he's not like fighting somebody.
Well, he's supposed to more like represent the, you know, the discipline. And,
right.
Yeah, he's killing you with that one.
One thing I've commented, this is a little bit of a tangent, is that Privateer Press has been going to very two-dimensional sculpts to save on casting prices. The Abbot, the Champion pretty much personifies this. Mm-hmm. That guy's a one piece, probably with his two scabbards as a separate piece.
I think they both are, aren't they?
I can see that upper arm being a separate bit.
Probably. One of the arms, might be separate. Yeah, the one that comes down in front of his leg probably is. At least the hand, at the very least. So in that regard, he's kind of two-dimensional, and I don't like it as much, but I like it a lot. I think it looks good, and I like the Abbot as well. So we can't comment on his rules, but I'll feel them because they're cool looking.
I like the little splash of color they put at least on the Abbot and partially on the cloth there on the Champion. A little maroonish, reddish looking color.
Yeah. So that's all the Nis stuff we have. As far as minions, I don't think there are any.
I don't think there really are. We have minion warlocks, which aren't attachments, but that's the new big thing. So right. It may be a while till we get attachments for minions.
I'd be fine with that.
Do bog trogs really need an attachment?
Yes.
No, but
bone grinders?
No, not the bone grinders. The pharaoh.
Oh, brigands.
The brigands could definitely use one.
I can see that.
So that's all of it.
I think so.
So that is units. Our unit attachment discussion.
That is attachments. Yes. Units, solos.
I can't talk.
We covered it all.
So what do you guys think? Attachments are a good thing?
I think they're a good thing. You know, it's a little bit that adds a lot of diversity. All right. How about we go around and say one idea of UA that we'd like to see, some sort of attachment.
Okay.
I'll go first.
Okay.
I want to choose the Bile Thralls. Here's the thing. They lose Purge, but they can make a spray that, say, auto-hits. It's longer, but it doesn't necessarily cover as much area. But it goes farther, so they have a longer threat range.
Do they get destroyed?
I would say maybe it's a mini feat. Once per game, they can do that, and they don't get destroyed.
I just filled the cup. That's fantastic.
Yeah, that's... Wow.
Or maybe, you know, a lot of people are saying the Purge was too powerful, just POW-wise, so this could maybe be a POW 10 or something. But again, I'm saying they lose Purge.
That is, and the fact that they can't use it at all and throughout the whole game.
Ever. It's either they... So they spray, auto-hit, and every turn...
They get some sort of limiter put on their weapons.
Yeah, something like that, maybe.
Even the POW with Purge, though, that's not really the real powerful thing. It's corrosion. It's the corrosion with auto hit. Well, I mean, that gets around the Zealots and the Monolith Bearer quite well with Greater Destiny.
For me, the thing I hate about Purge is that it's no longer 8 inches. So I'd love to be able to have a 13-inch threat range rather than 11, because sometimes I'm only caring about one or two models, but they're way out there.
See, it really sucks when they lop off 2 inches on a ranged weapon, doesn't it?
That's what she said. I don't know.
But with Death Ride, you get an inch of that back.
That's true. But anyway.
All right, Dave Coulier.
I think the Venators actually could use a pretty decent UA. In fact, I think it's, if there was going to be another UA metamorphosis for Scorn, I think it's going to definitely be the Akuari or the Vendors. The Paingivers could definitely get one. That'd be kind of interesting. But I think these are the two units that really could use a boost. I think the Vendors could use something like either Dismember or Prey or even Concentrated Volley. I mean, I hate to sound like, you know, it would be like everything else, but that would really help them a lot. With the Akuari, something to make them a little better, or at least they could run and shoot their chains or lengthen up the chain by another 2 inches. That would be helpful. Or even just give them tough would be fantastic.
Okay.
Actually, I do have some circle. Okay. Some sort of Wolf of War that works well with wolves and Reeves.
Oh, wait. They have one. Shoot.
Oops. Next.
You know, I'll go back. Okay.
It would have to be Reeves and I'll pick a werewolf.
Okay, I got two that I think I can come to fairly quick. Number one, a choir attachment that gives them some new songs, or potentially can affect units. One of the two. Not with the existing choir songs, obviously.
Doesn't matter.
You know, but...
But yeah, I think new songs would be kind of cool, actually. Prayers or whatever.
For the Legion, I would like to see a palanquin for the pasta pot, so it can move on its own.
I'm sorry, a plank?
A palanquin.
I don't know what that is.
You know, like the throne guys carry on the...
Oh, yeah, right. Oh, okay, cool.
Basically, a way for the pasta pot to move on its own and not need guys to be touching it, which would therefore allow it to be more maneuverable, which would make that unit fit with the Legion maneuverability army in the first place. I have not bought and will not buy a pasta pot until it basically is faster. It's just too slow for me.
I think you said it just a minute ago. What's it actually called?
A palanquin?
Oh, a spawning vessel. Sorry. The thing I was looking for.
Yes, the spawning vessel. So... That's my two.
Cool.
Well, I think everyone's going to agree with you on this one. What Signar really needs, I mean, we need a unit attachment for the field mechanics. So I think they've been really remiss with that unit up to now and not putting anything to those guys. So no, in all seriousness, the unit that really, actually about the only unit that we have that doesn't have one so far is the Storm Guard. Specifically, what I would like to see it do, the Storm Guard suffer from 5-inch movement. They have reach, but they're slow. So it takes a while to get them upfield. I would like to see something like a Furious Charge would be nice. Maybe say like a mini feat that gives them Pathfinder. So they wouldn't have to worry about, getting through the rough terrain. I'm sure there are some other things they can do. I mean, they're a good unit on their own. You know, the fact that they can attack through their ranks to begin with is great. It's just really, I think they just need to get up there to the front lines to be able to do their punch. Maybe a mini feat that would give them something like an armor bump for a turn so that they could survive that Furious Charge turn.
I'd say give them defensive line like the Sword Knights have. Give them a buddy system kind of thing.
Ooh, shield wall. I like shield wall better. Like I didn't really get
they
into
don't
I like,
have shields.
Damn
the,
it.
Yeah, I was about to say, you're even right. The bucklers well, with the Storm well, Guard aren't
okay,
good enough for that.
By that very example, then the Sword Knights shouldn't have defensive line. They have shields. They should have had shield wall. But anyway,
the Legionnaires
no, you're right, so.
have defensive line.
Yeah, actually defensive shield. Line would probably be good.
So that does it for unit attachments?
Yep.
So, Stu, did you bring us a list?
I brought a list.
What is this list?
All right, I brought a list, and I wanted to do something that would show off a lot of UAs, and as Pat mentioned, I figured Signar was the best way to go since they had the most options in terms of UAs.
Does this list have a name?
Attachtastic.
Okay. How about Attastic?
Attastic? That actually works better. Attastic. Attach Elastic.
I like it.
All right. So
Attach-O-Matic.
It is.
What faction is it?
Yeah, it's Signar, which woo-hoo! Is actually, it's, like I said, the most UAs there, so it gave me the most options, but it's also traditionally the worst faction for me to ever play. I can't win a game with Signar to save my life, and it's happened a couple of times.
That's all right, neither can Pat.
Yeah, like we didn't see that coming.
It is a 750-point list with Captain Haley, which is the prime version of Haley, Thorn, the Squire, a Journeyman Warcaster.
Who is an attachment, let's face it.
Practically. Arcane Tempest Gun Mages with their UA, the Black 13th, a full unit of Long Gunners with their UA, Stormblades with their UA, Iris, Rupert Carvolo, the Piper of Ord, and Lady Ayana, and Master Holt. And that's 742 points out of 750.
What are you going to do those last 8 points? This is a trick question because there is an actual answer.
Well, I don't think you can fit a Stormsmith in with that many points, so I think I'm just going to have a sandwich.
You're going to convert to Minoth Netarak.
You know, I have to put up with this every week at the shop. I mean, most people only have to put up with this like for an hour, and they can put you on pause. There is no pause button with you, though, in real life. I've tried it. Neither nipple works.
I'll tell you what, though. What you could have done, you could drop off one of your long gunners, and then you'd have enough points for a unit of field mechanics.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Well, field mechanics actually would have been an interesting option. Definitely kind of a craftier option, certainly, to either keep Thorn in good repair or to just taunt people into trying to attack a defense 16 gobber.
I have actually used, like I said, at least you've got a jack in there, but I would have put them in, I've put them in as meat shields, as bodyguards to put around, like around Haley, because like you said, they're defense 16. You can kill them. If you hit them, they're dead, but that defense 16 is hard to hit.
Yeah, exactly.
So, but anyway, I digress.
So what's your game plan?
All right, the game plan is essentially, I put these together and went, wow, the Black 13th and the Arcane Gun Mages and the Long Gunners are all putting out all this incredible, all this fantastic range attack. Haley's Temporal Barrier is definitely slowing things down, making it things easier to go off. But what I was really concerned about is, well, what happens when you start getting into heavy armor? And at that point, that's where the Stormblades came in, because I figured they were the best option, considering they had a UA. Otherwise, I probably would have put in a Stormguard, honestly. But with them and the UA, not only do they have a decent ranged attack as well, but they're pretty hefty in terms of their damage output, so they'll be able to do some good stuff. And with Rupert in there, he'll definitely be able to make sure they see the front lines. Originally, I thought about taking the Precursor Knights instead of them for the Kneel, being able to make them the giant speed bump, but not impede any of the ranged elements. Iris and Ayana and Holt are in there just because they're fantastic.
So is this a sit-back-and-shoot list?
Definitely. This is the oh god, you know, stay away from me kind of a list. Definitely.
So you're probably not going to play this in Steamroller, in which case you would have to give up the middle of the table. This is more of just an assassin game?
Actually, you know, you could probably play this actually fairly aggressively, given the high defense of the Gun Mages, the Black 13th, and just the overall aggressive. You can play this game definitely aggressively. I mean, there's an aggressive game to play with Temporal Barrier, certainly. And Thorn with Haley can now channel spells even though he's engaged. So it's, you know, I mean, there is an aggressive game to this. I think it plays a little more naturally, a little easier if you're playing a, you know, take and hold kind of scenario, though.
Okay. How is this going to be deployed, set up? Are you just going to have Stormblades going to be out front, or are they going to be kind of kept back a little bit?
The Stormblades are actually going to be out in front. I mean, they're the front line guys, probably running or charging everything in sight. The Gun Mages and the Black 13th, I would actually probably deploy on each flank, letting them become just general troubleshooters, as well as, you know, just some real damage threats. The Lung Gunners backing up the Stormblades for whatever they can't hit, you know, they'll go ahead and start throwing out volleys. And Iris and Holt maybe backing up one of the Gun Mage units. And Carvolo just taking it up with the Gun Mages the Stormblades and the Long Gunners.
Okay. And the Squire making Temporal Barrier even dumber.
Yes. Yes, it would.
And an extra focus for extra chain lightning or something.
Or to even prevent another spell.
Mm-hmm.
I was playing a Coven list against a Haley player, and I completely forgot about the effect of she can spend a focus and just negate a spell that's cast within 3 inches of her, so.
Yep.
Well, a target
within 3 inches of her. Yeah. So that'd be the strategy.
Okay. Seems pretty straightforward. What do you guys think? Pat, what do you think? Let's start with the other Signar player. Would you just try and outgun it?
Well, actually, I wouldn't do anything because the blue on gold does not attack the blue on gold. So we would work together in friendship and go attack somebody else.
Yeah, but I'm stupid, so tell me how I'm wrong.
No, actually, I would have an element of shooting in this, but I don't think I would try to sit back and go for an attrition bout and try to outshoot, because you've got almost all the elements of our long range shooting force in here. The only one that you don't have really are the trenchers. And that's what I'm going to put. I would go with a list probably centered on trenchers. And the first thing that I would do is, well, if I won the roll, I would fully advance deploy them. And then I would get them in as close to you and up in your face as quickly as I can. Just try to, if anything else, you know, kill what I can on the way up, but also then to tie up your shooters so that they couldn't then shoot what's behind them, possibly. You know,
absolutely.
At least, you know, put them in your grill so that you're dealing with them, and then I can move the rest of my forces up. So
if
that
I
would be
trenchers,
a big.
I would have definitely upgraded it to E. Haley for just a, you know, a trencher shenanigans style list.
I think that would, that's going to be big. I think that that's going to be big for anybody, is just is closing with this force as quickly as you can.
Yep.
Beyond that, I would probably go with the Storm Lances. I think I would take a full unit of, I'd probably put a full unit of the Storm Lances with Lattermore in there, throw an Arcane Shield onto them, their armor 20. They're going to be tough to kill. They're going to take a lot of damage. I mean, yeah, you're going to be able to shoot them with your things. You know, if you do a CRA with the long gunners on one of them, you could probably take one down, but I don't know. You probably, maybe one a turn. If you got really lucky, you might be able to get one shot on each and take two down, but that would be possible, but yeah. Just stagger them up there. So once you get them in there, if I could start pulling off my, my lightning strikes on you, that would be effective. Cause the other thing that you have on the flip side of this is the things that, you know, like the arcane Tempest Gun Mages are hard to hit, but if you hit them, they're dead. They have paper thin armor. So, something like that would be beneficial. The shooting and the fast getting up there. I don't know how many jacks I would put in this list. And I'm also trying to think what Warcaster would be best with this. Against Haley, you're going to throw a lot of lead at me. You know, like a Prime Striker would be good. Just, you know, throw up that plus five armor just to keep things alive as they close.
He's also got blur.
And he's got blur. I can put snipe on something to shoot a little bit farther. I would actually have Earthquake the tactical advantage. You know, if I had long gunners or something, I could shoot them a little bit farther. Or even my snipe or my trenchers could shoot 16 inches, which would outshoot anything you've got. But and the earthquake would be good. Kane is always a good one to put in there. You know, it'd be a gamble with Kane, but, you know, Prime Kane, I could run him up there, pop his feet, kill a lot of your guys, and just save two focus so that I could flash his ass back after he was done, because I wouldn't want to be on the receiving end of any of this.
And Kane and Ekane are a little more fluffy in terms of a gun mage lulls kind of theme.
Yeah, that's true. You know, you typically like the run and gun type of list that people talk about is usually a Kane, you know, would, you know, one of the two of them. Siege would be fun against this one too. You know, I could pop my ground pounder down on you as well, because the thing is, you know, you're especially like with your long gunners using the unit attachment, and we'll just go ahead and get to that since I talked about it before. One of the biggest problems I have with the long gunner unit attachment is it basically says, okay, you're going to take your long gunners and you're basically going to put them all in a little circle so that you can use your concentrated volley. Well, the problem with that is, and I learned
it's not actually concentrated volley, suppressive fire.
I'm sorry, suppressive fire. That's yeah, my bad. To use your, you know, your suppressive fire ability. Well, what I learned long ago that with long gunners is that it's actually kind of beneficial to have them in a line, because AoEs tear them up. You know, one good shot from a mortar that can kill an entire unit that's bulked up into a circle. Siege can do the same thing. I could put an explosivo on my ground pounder shot. My first one that I hit with would have a 3-inch AoE, and if they're bulked in tight, I could take out, you know, a fair number of them. So that would be kind of fun too. Yeah, I think the biggest thing that you said that you really don't have in this list is once you do close with you is the melee punch. Now, definitely the Stormblades are good at that, but that really is the bulk of your melee. I mean, beyond that, the rest of those shooting units, that's where they fall down, is once you close with these with Signar. You know, if you're a lot of shooty, they can't really hold up for themselves. So you hope that you kill them before, and oftentimes that works. But so yeah, I think that the key for me would be just get there quickly. The Storm Lances would be good because I can run up there really quickly. Trenchers can get there very quickly as well and start tying up things, and then just move the things up behind it and just start plinking away. And then it is going to get at that point. It's going to be into the temporal barrier warfare, and you're going to be killing my stuff because I'm minus three def, and we'll just see who wins first. So those are my ideas.
Okay.
And I hate to shoot the Signar.
That's all right.
If it makes you feel any better, just envision that list under Venter's control.
There you go. That changes it completely.
That's a good idea.
I like that, yeah.
All right. So, Protectorate. The first thing that I see that I would try would be a Hieroclaimer and Rolling Smoke.
Yep.
I'd leave some of the flanks unsmoked, let you kill them, build up soul tokens, and have fun. Because nothing beats a higher claimer with 30 focus. Well, yeah, okay, the higher claimer with 40 focus. But that's beside the point.
You mean Iris can?
You have well, that's what the vault's for. But yeah, so you know that would be one option. Another one, if there's no hills, I mean, since you don't have siege to drop anybody or lift one up on hills, using a screen of zealots to block line of sight would be fairly effective. Or since we're talking about unit attachments, the TFG with unit attachment, stacking Iron Zeal with Shield Wall to block firing lanes and make you waste CRAs on defense 22 TFG. I'd probably also like my Cav. Probably I'd have to stay out of Temple Barrier so I could charge in, basically. Because if I'm caught in it, I'm not going anywhere. Redeemers, Delivers would actually be pretty decent because there is a lot of low armor stuff here. Regular Fiora's Feet or Epic Fiora's Redeemer, either one. They're around the fire. Some good times. Idrins would be okay to start the game, but once you start throwing up TB and they can't charge, Intercept becomes worthless, they're tied down. You're dropping their defense by 3, they're going to be easily hittable. They'd get shot off very quick. But if I could get an early strike off and kill some key stuff, it'd be worth throwing the unit out there. Now, obviously, I'm not going to be killing you with spells, because you're probably going to have focus on you. So, I mean, that's probably out. But if I could take care of Thorn, Vilmon would be okay, because you couldn't arc anything at him. But I'd have to actually take out Thorn, because like you said before, he can arc in melee. But yeah, blocking line of sight or somehow giving you a target you have to shoot to save the rest of my troops as they move upfield is going to be key to getting to you. That or using a lot of range, but I can't win a ranged battle straight up against something like this. You know, I've got Idrians that can hang back and shoot. I can field Alton, Kel, and Saxon Oryk, you know, guys with the rifles, but I can't field nearly as many bullets as you can, especially with your feet. I could supplement a melee force like that, but I can't rely on it.
Yeah.
So I have to get to you. And Temple Barrier makes that really hard. So, yeah, it's going to be rockets, hopefully, to cover my advance. Smoke if I've got the right Warcaster, and just try and get upfield and get to you. Because if I can get to you in melee, I think I can take care of you. Got your Storm Guard or Storm Blade, but they don't leap. So my main melee force, if you haven't whittled it down, is probably going to outnumber you. Meaning you would kill some of them, and I should be able to get a retaliation. That would be my my goal.
Okay.
Or I'll create a drop and pop. Sorry.
Do you that always works.
The Stormblade UA doesn't allow any leaps, does it? I know it's the Stormclad. It's if you throw the jack, and that's what
generates. Right. The Stormblade UA, if I recall correctly, allows them to shoot further and more powerfully.
Oh, and they can do a CRA.
Well, it's not actually CRA, so you can't. Well, you can do it to Miles. It can't be CRA. Right, like
I can do it to
Amon or Amon. Perfect balance. Yeah. Yeah. You want to take Cutter?
Okay.
What would you do against yourself?
To destroy my own list.
Lots of Mana Wars.
E-Irisk and the Mana War and the Ninja Mana War of Doom immediately springs to mind. Shock Troopers with Widowmakers behind them become an instant success at any party at this, because at this point it's like, well, okay, -3 defense and moving half rate. Who cares? You know,
right.
At that point, either that or actually what might be really fun would be, as we said before, the really expensive, the really risky, but really amusing Fenris and the Doom Reavers of Doom.
If you can get out there before TB gets popped. Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. I mean, just all the abomination with Berserk and just running around, just tearing shit up is just, that could be a lot of fun.
Yeah, because a fair number of your units there are not fearless.
Despite the UAs.
Yes.
I like...
We have a lot of fearless in Signar, but what you've got there is not. And yeah, those Doom Reavers can tear that up.
I like the Behemoth because of the mortars.
Yep.
I like the mortars themselves. And Winter Guard Rocketeers. I mean, they only get 3, don't get unlimited rockets like the Trenchers do grenades, but... Those are AoEs that are going to drift, and you don't have to hit those again, defense 16 gun mages when you can cover them with an AoE.
And
exactly.
The Bob and Weave, they can get the Bob and Weave, which would give them a defense boost.
Yeah, but he'll be CRA.
I think the gun mages are 15.
Are they 15?
I think so.
So, but something still.
Like that. So it's not low.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, the gun mages are something like 15, 12, so, mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's you're not going to hit, but then again, who cares?
You mentioned the Widowmakers.
The Widowgunners, yeah.
Epic Storeship putting Shatterstar on them. Popping guys.
Yeah. That's sort of guaranteed, well, not guaranteed, but with all the CRAs here, you're going to have maybe about an inch, probably no more than an inch between a lot of models.
Mm-hmm.
So even though a 3-inch AOE centered on a model won't blow up to, any deviations will probably clip, say, too.
Right.
So,
Greylord putting smoke on Man of War or whatnot, blocking mm-hmm. line of sight.
Yep.
I mean, really, that's the thing. I mean, you actually kind of started this trend, rightfully so, talking about playing against this, Pat, which you'd use smoke against the block line of sight. Well, hell yeah, it's a ranged army. That's what you're going to do. So any line of sight blocking thing, I'm sure Josh will mention a ton of it with Circle when we get to it.
Yeah, but, that's hard to do with Circle because the things giving you the clouds are still visible and they'll die.
Well, I was thinking more forests, but yes.
Oh, okay, sure.
So, I mean, it's, block line of sight and get up there, and Kaldor can do it too. They're going to have to slug their way through Temporal Barrier.
Even but the if old they witches do, is great. I mean, just run Scrappy up and just feet. I mean, nothing in there is going to be able to take a POW 14.
Yeah, it's just going
to
stand there and shoot Scrapjack, though, and then your feet's gone.
Gorman can easily...
And if you can put it in a cloud, then if they're not closer than 5, then Scrapjack is safe.
Yeah, I mean, Gorman can easily
sure.
keep that, give it some insurance towards that.
Fair enough. And it's got to teleport up into some smoke or concealment granting effect anyway. So, yeah.
Mm, true, yeah. Yep.
So that's a good point.
It'll be Murderer Crows most of the time.
Right, but yeah, that feat is very nasty. Good point. Sorsha. That's a round that she can advance to you that you can't do anything about. I think you'd actually maybe do okay against Epic Vlad if you could whittle his army down before he got enough close to you. Mm-hmm. Problem is he's got a lot of stuff with stealth, and he doesn't need a whole lot to kill you with the feet.
Yeah.
So. But yeah, I got some good options. That's War Machine Hordes.
We haven't gone over Crix.
Who cares about Crix?
Okay, that's fine, and then we'll sneak up and kill you.
Oh,
that's what happens. Yeah.
You're right. I'm sorry.
Actually, against Taylor, I've always had a problem playing against Taylor as a Crix player because she's got the Temporal Barrier and the Vortex Spear, like we mentioned, which locks down two of the things that Crix does really, really well. So you gotta just go in there knowing that you're going to be slogging against going uphill. I can see a few different options. One is knowing the Temporal Barrier is going to be up. Hope I have a bunch of Arc Nodes that I can just run one up every turn and either Venom everything or Blood Rain everything or do some sort of AoE or spray spell attack to clear out your relatively squishy army. But again, I can't target anything too close to Haley, otherwise I'm going to lose all that. And even against the Gun Mages, I'm probably going to have to boost just to hit.
Quick question regarding Haley. This sure. is something that it comes up from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say you've got a unit of store of... Gun Mages.
Mm-hmm.
One of them's in 3 inches of Haley, one of them's the rest of them are not. If you cast a spell on the unit,
mm-hmm.
like Crippling Grasp, that's outside of 3 inches from Haley, can she Vortex Spirit?
She Vortex Spears against targets within 3 of her, and you're okay. targeting a model. Even though you target model unit, you still target a model.
Okay.
So you target somebody well away from 3 inches. Yeah. So something like that would work, but again, you have to still kill Haley at the end, assuming you're playing an assassination game, and that's difficult to do sometimes with pure spell assassin. So you got to have something to back that up, and that's not going to be easy to do against this because she is going to be TBing every turn. So a lot of my melee units aren't going to work well because they're going to be moving just a few inches a turn. They're not going to get charges off, and unless they have stealth like the Bane Thralls, they're going to get shot to death before they get anywhere. So you have to really play careful. Another option would be to take Gore Shade, just Cloak of Shadows him, and walk his way up the field every turn. Take maybe some Stalkers or something that have stealth, maybe be able to get up there and kill a few key models. Other than that, maybe Terminus with a bunch of, say, Revenants hoarding around him. You can shoot him all you want, and he'll be, killing the Revenants. They'll come back, assuming I can keep the Quartermaster safe.
Would you go for a Deathjack Soulgate with
Gorshade?
Yeah.
Maybe. But again, with the TB, it's hard to get something up there. Even if I had, say, like Soul Hunters moving 8, or only running 8, and so the odds are they're probably going to die before they get anywhere. He has enough models here, I think, to clog up any lanes that I would use to get up there. It would be very difficult. Possible, but very difficult. Because even Black Bane's Ghost Raiders will be affected by TB, since it's a spell. So
at least he couldn't shoot him, though.
He couldn't unless something was Iron Unholted.
But that's only one model.
It is, but then you can just cap Black Bane, for example. Which, since you can see through the rest of the unit to shoot him, that's not necessarily going to be difficult. The Black 13th would be hell, because they're going to be 18-inch shots every turn, shooting pretty much whatever they want. It would be difficult. I would just push and push and push and hope I make it to Haley.
Feed meat to the grinder?
Pretty much. I don't see much other options here.
Troll Bloods. I think they pretty much mimic Kaldor
mm-hmm.
with champions replacing Manowar.
Yeah. You break your way up the field.
You like just like you said with the Crix, you got to get through the grinder with your tough rolls. Here's where tough might actually bite the trolls is that, you know, if you're knocked down, you're slowed because you can't get up and run. So that could actually be a problem. But, you know, with that Creel Stone, champions just running forward every turn, getting up there. You better hope you can kill him quick. Bring in some Cav from the side. With the Impaler, his Animus, I think Grim can shoot. What's his range?
13 with the regular rifle, I think.
So if he could actually clean a line of sight to Haley, he could cap her. I mean, if she's throwing up TB every turn, that's three of her seven.
Four of her seven. Four, yeah.
So that's four of her seven.
But she has eight here. Yeah.
Right, exactly. So, you know, still be doing some damage.
This actually goes for all Horde's armies, but Bogtrogs aren't going to be affected by TB the next turn.
Sure.
So that might let you do something.
Mm-hmm.
If nothing else, you could tie up one of the Gunmage flanks.
Sure.
Another option would be take a heavy beast and, you know, run it through the feet. Obviously, it only goes half speed, but if you can get into a spot where you could crit slam it from behind with an Impaler and knock it over some troops,
mm-hmm.
throw in your own stuff, two-handed throws, and then reveling it back up. You know, you've got options to get up there with trolls, but it's going to be, again, trying to too much meat the clog grinder.
Yeah.
What about Yon Circle?
Circle?
I have no idea what Yon means.
I have a lot of the same problems that Crix does, I think. You know, we've talked about the Kruger Lightning Span list, for example. That would actually, I think, be very effective against this, clearing out pretty much whatever you wanted.
As long as you stayed away from Haley.
Exactly. Same sort of thing. We do have lots of teleportation abilities, which would sort of negate TB in some cases. You know, teleport your stones up there, maybe a black clad into a good position. That'll get you closer, at least. You wouldn't have to go through the whole effort to get up there. I actually think the Lord of the Feast might do pretty decently here. He's got stealth, which means stuff on the other side of the board. You don't have to worry about killing him. He's going to have high enough armor that all these POW 10s, for example, aren't going to do much. You could CRA, but again, if you position him right, you might be either out of stealth range or he'll be engaged, so you're not going to be CRAing anyway. So I think he might actually be able to get quite a few carrying tokens, maybe if you're lucky, pull off the offering, which, again, would then help you get a field for even farther. I mentioned Bogtrogs. I think Bogtrogs would work great, again, with any Horde's army. Kaya, with her teleportation, would work pretty well. Kaya might actually do pretty decently here, especially with against the odds and Epic Kaya just taking out an entire unit, maybe, or more than half a unit, hopefully trying to cause it to run if she can.
I could see it wouldn't
because she has lots of stealth too, actually.
It wouldn't be too hard, I think, theoretically, to, for example, keep a Gorax out of Temporal Barrier, run another beast in, Gorax moves up to it, throws it further up, and then you might be able to Spirit Door into melee with Haley. I'm not sure exactly the math on how much ground that would cover.
Gorax is only speed 5. He would only be able to move a few inches into Temporal Barrier to throw. And then
I mean, you're not affected by it if he starts outside.
So. Oh, true. But either way, he's only moving right. 5.
That's probably a little bit still short.
Probably, because his strength isn't going to be enough to really throw it up there. It's probably short. You'd have to have a good deviation, I think. You'd probably have to move the full 3. But, you know, Argus speed 7, they can run 7. Or even 14. Actually, that's true. If you have an Argus outside of the 16 inches, it can run up there and put Kai within Spirit Door killing range. So it's possible. It's certainly not impossible. But 16 inches is pretty big.
Right, sure. Scorn. Well, you got the Kriya, which counts for something.
Mm-hmm.
You got a lot of Shield Wall troops. I mean, probably...
I think Eumorgul is still the way to go on that.
Blinding everything,
and yeah, just...
He's only going to have to hit her once, maybe twice.
Exactly.
Yeah. Problem is, he's not going to be charging.
True.
He's not going to have that, charge teleport, ha ha ha, kind of thing going on, clearly, due to temporal barrier. But, yeah, I mean, I think if he just plays his cards right, goes slow, brings his own meat grinder, so to speak, full of stuff with Ancestral Guardians and maybe even Immortals. I think he would definitely be able to pull off some interesting stuff going on there.
The only problem is Epic Morgul moves up feats on Haley. She has to give up something, movement or action.
Mm-hmm.
She gives up her action. She casts Temporal Barrier and she walks backwards. She's safe. So I think that depending on if you can hem her in, unfortunately she kind of has a retreat alley.
Yeah. And also, I think my personal favorite, Makeda, is also a strong choice here, mainly because...
Run and attack?
Well, not just run and attack, but more just her own feat, which is go ahead and, my stuff will essentially count for 2 as long as I don't give you anything.
Even better, those guys that he kills, you can chain upfield.
I was about to say you get them farther upfield just because they died.
Yeah. So that's a good one. Vexeris's feet, if you can get someone up there. But I don't know if that would actually
be. Is that melee only? Or is that any
attack? Might be melee only. Maybe. I don't know.
Anything what about else? The Ferox? Got to mention the Ferox in their elite.
Sure, Ferox can jump in. I mean, they can't get all the way.
Yeah. So permanent reach, 8-inch move.
If you're going to use the Ferox, though, I'd definitely go with Saul. That way you know you've got enough corpses running around to really put the really let them count, have every little hit count.
Yep. But they can also leap in and tie stuff so they can't shoot you if they have to. Legion?
Do you even care?
Well, let's see.
Epic Thagrosh flies over the field.
What? Oh, no. Actually, I was going to say Epic Lilith sits out of TB and feats.
She's shooting 14 inches then?
She's shooting 16.
She's base 12. So she's shooting 16, though, then she's not hitting Haley.
That's true.
It's all right. Because that's what the archers are for. Because they're also shooting 16 with poison arrows.
That's true. They won't get the aiming bonus, though, to hit her.
Concentrated volley, maybe? Or CRA?
If they're outside of TB, though,
but
then they can't shoot her unless they move.
Sure.
That's all.
You can move. Well, yeah, but you can move. You won't get the aiming bonus, but they could still do CRA.
Oh, sure, yeah. Absolutely, kind of yeah.
And, I mean, at that point, Epic Lil's feat might not necessarily even be to kill Haley. It's going to be to make it so Haley can't kill her. You know, strafe with one or two Seraphs on Thorn. Take out the thing's arc node at the very least. Or if you've got Death Striders out there, snipe it. Because they do the auto point to pick a column.
Does the Archer UA let you pick the column?
No, I don't believe so.
I don't think so.
Okay.
Original Lilith used to be able to. I don't think Epic can. But if I can take out Thorn and then wipe out a lot of your army, then eventually I'm going to be able to him and Haley. Because, yeah, she has Chain Lightning. But if I stay spread out enough, she can't Chain Lightning everything, and something can eventually get to her.
Assuming she TBs every turn, she's sitting on 17 armor.
Mm-hmm.
And then if she Chain Lightnings once, she's sitting on zero yeah. focus. So you might even be able to bait her into casting Chain Lightning that one time where she's sitting on nothing and then go for the kill.
Yeah, if I could get my Raptors near her and leave them within 4 inches of each other.
Yeah, she's still, 17 defense, which is not low.
16.
So she's 16. 16, yeah. But still, that's not low, but still. If she's going to be sitting on 14 armor, it's not going to take much to kill her.
Right.
Does the Squire's increasing the control range happen as long as the Squire's still alive?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it has to be there.
Okay, so I mean, with Lilith's stuff, I mean, you may not be able to hit
pop
Haley,
the Squire.
Yeah. But if you can,
good point.
You can pop the Squire first, then you're definitely giving your archer some breathing room.
Sure, because then I've got 2 inches on top of your TB. I mean, obviously, if I could, I would love to shoot Haley on that feat turn. But I mean, like I said, if I can clear out your army so you can't attack me back, can't complain about that.
Yeah,
Black 13 is going to be a pain because I can't shoot you unless I can outrange you because you will return fire me.
Mm-hmm.
The other option is if they can't shoot through woods, right?
I believe that's correct. Unless, they don't have flash fire.
So if I got someone with Hunter hiding or Isle of Sight hiding behind a woods and shooting them.
And you might actually need the Isle of Sight because if they're sitting in a cloud or a forest, then they're stealthed.
Mm-hmm.
So concentrated volley obviously wouldn't care. But
so, you know, I've got a couple options, I think. Angelius, Carnivian, not quite the best choice against this list because all your CRAs trump the Angelius' defense, and his armor is pretty low.
And if you end up charging her, she's plus 2 defense.
Yeah, that's true. That's something we haven't mentioned. She has set defense, which is actually really nice on her. Now, given if she has TB up, you're not charging her.
True.
Because you're either too far back or not charging.
Yeah.
But it's a nice insurance policy if you pull with your pants down.
Though. Yeah.
So.
And, you know, there probably will be turns where she doesn't use TB because she needs to do something else. And that's your opening. You got to do something. You got to make it worth your while then.
If you ever see TB drop, you have to go all out.
Yep,
it doesn't matter if you know you're giving up half your army, you have to jump on that opportunity because that's your one chance to get upfield.
Yep.
So I think that does it. Whose Animus has Burrow? One of the new lesser minions.
A Submerge with the crocodile?
That's it, Submerge. If you got water on the table, Gatorman and the new crocodile lesser warlock that we haven't seen all the stats for, but we know it can submerge.
Right.
Going upfield and being immune to ranged attacks. There you go. Get them up. Get them at the table.
That was pretty funny.
Leap out of the water. And bog drags too, of course.
The whole reptilian theme, really. You know, it's all water theme.
You're saying it has to be, the water has to be on the table anywhere and they can do that, or just?
Well, they have to be in the water.
In the water.
They're amphibious. Okay. So if they're in there, they can't be attacked.
The only thing I was, it seemed like you were saying if you had water, if you had a little bit of puddle of water over there in one corner, they could do this like by going through land.
Well, the Gatorman.
That didn't make sense. I just want to make sure.
The Gatorman Shaman can create their own.
He can, but if they're in TB, then they're walking 2.5 inches and sitting in the water.
I mean, 2.5 inches
every turn.
Still though, it's.
Absolutely, absolutely.
That's 2.5 inches every turn.
But that was actually something it would be funny. A Crix player I'd probably do is use Helldivers because they're not going to be impeded at all by any of this.
Well, they can't dig back in.
This is not the same turn, but
yeah.
They're not affected by the -3 defense. Or they're not, I mean...
That's true.
They're not
on the table. I mean,
yeah, good point.
They're burrowing through at 8 inches. So
no.
They, can,
they don't burrow. They don't move. You're thinking of the pygmy burrowers?
No, when they pop up.
Oh, yeah, then they move 8 inches.
They're still kind of leapfrogging their way up the board unimpeded. So they're essentially ignoring what's going on upstairs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then they come up with their two huge, massive arms, and then they bite you with their little bitty teeth.
Yeah. These arms can dig through solid rock like that.
But I can't hurt you with them.
Can't hurt you. Is there anything else we want to talk about?
I don't think so. I think that
about
wraps it up.
Are we sure? Because we've been going long. We need to yak more. All right. I guess that does it for us. Stu, thanks for coming out.
Thank you, Stu.
Talking UA with us.
It's always fun.
Ooh-ah.
Ooh-ah.
And wahs.
Weapon attachments. Ooh-ah, wah, and we didn't even talk about the Warcaster attachments.
Wahs.
There are Warcaster attachments.
We've talked about them before.
That's true.
I mean, literally, we really have, so.
All right.
Crix doesn't have one. Oh, wait, they've had one since Prime. Never mind.
Exactly.
All right, that's enough.
See you guys.
See ya.
Bye.
To contact Iron Agenda by email, send your message to contact@ironagenda.com. To send a voicemail, dial 206-333-0983. Iron Agenda is copyright 2009 by its hosts and released under the Creative Commons Attribution No Derivative Works 3.0 United States license. Opening and closing music provided courtesy of Joshua Salter.
Tomorrow, Abbott.
Tomorrow.
Welcome, Abbott.
Tomorrow.
Hello, Abbott!
Hello!
Hey, Abbott!
I hate that guy!